Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Peter, co-founder of FinU. Hey, Peter, great to have you on the show. How's everything going today?
Hi, Richard. Thank you. Everything's good. Happy to be with you today. And hi to everyone.
Nice. So let's kick off the show by maybe you just telling us a bit about yourself and your background.
My name is Piotr Peter. I'm in English, born in Poland, raised in France all my life, living in Spain. Co-founder of FinU with two awesome co-founders, Julian, a German guy, and Ruchali, Indian woman. Both beautiful persons. I'm really happy to work with them and happy to share our journey with you today.
Cool. And can you provide for our listeners a bit of background about how the idea came about and where you are right now?
Sure. I'll start with what FinU was when we started, and I'll end up with what we're doing today. So we actually started as an insurtech startup a year and a half ago in May, June 2019. And after like a few weeks of customer interviews in Europe and an acceleration program in Munich, we just figured out there was no market fit for our idea. So FinU actually started failing, really fast failing after 2 weeks. But we decided to screen other markets to see for a better market fit. So the idea back then was single item insurance. There was no match in Europe, basically, because Europeans just don't care if you break your electronic devices. You just fix it or replace it. You don't have to sell your car, cancel your vacations to fix your smartphone. So we started to look at other markets to search for better market fit. And while screening Colombia, Brazil, and Mexico, when doing an acceleration program in Colombia, we discovered a better market fit over there. But most importantly, we actually discovered a much bigger problem, which is the lack of access to credit by the adult population in Latin America. And so we actually get intrigued. We started to scratch the surface, then dig deeper to understand this issue. And long story short, for instance, in Mexico, where we are about to launch, a lot of people just go, millions of people just go every year to offline pawn shops to finance themselves because of lack of credit score, credit history. They can't get access to formal credit products. And back then, we decided after some iterations to pivot. And instead of asking our users which electronic they have to, so we can insure them, the idea was, okay, let's prevent users from going to offline pawn shops anymore, where the experience is not a Starbucks experience, and ask them what electronics they have, so we can lend against these electronics, but digitally, that you could get a pawn loan, let's say, from home. And that was the pivot we decided to take last year. And after some iterations again, we ended up launching now FinU, and what we do is 100% digital asset-backed lending. We lend against electronics. We start with smartphones, and the general thesis is we can lend against a user's smartphone device without actually the need to physically collect it. Basically, during the loan application process, we connect to the operating system of the device without having access to any personal data, but this enables us, after issuing the loan against this device, to remotely limit its usage in case of default. And then the user would, of course, reach out to us, and we'll both find solutions to avoid default and unlock the device and limit its features. So that's like in a nutshell what happened. Lots of changes. We changed model. We changed countries, continents. But I believe it was really an exciting journey. Now we're obviously happy with launch, but it was quite long. And we started failing, basically, with a failure. And now we're happy to launch. So hell of a roller coaster.
Oh, awesome. And it sounds like you guys had an interesting approach to developing your product. Could you go through that in a bit of detail for us?
You mean how we actually adapted our product over the course of time?
Or? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because it sounds like you launched, or you tried to launch, there was a failure, and then you went back to the drawing board, and you guys have iterated over a course of time, and now you're in a good position, slightly different country, continent, etc.
So yes, we had like an MVP, insurance focused MVP, a year and a half ago last year, but we didn't launch it on the market because after like 3 weeks of acceleration in Germany and custom interviews, we discovered there was no market fit. So we took this MVP, took some plane tickets, went to Latin America, and then as well, instead of launching this MVP in Latin America, while we were doing this acceleration program in Colombia, we discovered a much bigger problem, which is what I quoted, lack of access to credit. So when it comes to building our product, basically we had to drop most of the MVP and change it in order to basically launch a kind of a digital pawn shop where we would ask you remotely which device you have, but we had back then an offline component. We were initially supposed to send a last mile delivery company to pick up the device. And so we would physically receive it, revise it, and then issue the loan digitally. So the MVP at that time was changing a lot because we were not needing pictures of the device anymore prior to issuing loans because we had, in any case, to physically revise it. We did a second MVP, which we didn't release on the market as well, because in March this year, when we were about to release it, COVID came into the picture. And so when we were about to release the second MVP, where the user would just on our app tell us which device we have and schedule a pickup time for us to pick up the item and then revise it and send him the loan, we decided not to launch it because the offline component of this setup would have been heavily impacted by the coronavirus. And so in March this year, we adapted the product again, adding to the MVP this piece of software that enables us to connect to the operating system of a user's smartphone. So this is actually our third MVP we're about to launch now. Let's say from a tech efficiency perspective, not sure we were the best, but that was just needed because, it's better not to launch something that we know will fail and adapt, even if it takes some more time and improve our solution. But at some point, of course, we have to launch and we are launching now. No more changes, no more pivots. We have to launch at some point because we're not a research and development company. We have to be in production and prove people want to use our product. So yeah, I would say now we're really efficient since 5-6 months. Prior to that, there was a lot of iterations, searchings, one big failure in Europe because we understood there was a market fit. And then I wouldn't say a failure in Mexico, but when COVID came, we had to adapt ourselves. So this changed the product, obviously, because we had to make it more complex and 100% digital. So now we're connected to the user's device. We have to identify it remotely, check its condition remotely, basically perform everything remotely. And this implied quite some software to be added. But luckily, we have Ruchali. She's our secret weapon, great person and 30 years of experience. And we have a great tech team. And I would say that they deserve some rest now in the next weeks. Because Julian and myself responsible for the business, our decisions implied some heavy changes, heavy impact on tech teams.
It sounds like you guys were obviously going through a development process and also a market research process. And during that time, you're measuring whether your product was obviously whether it fitted the market. And if it didn't, you would move and you would pivot. So there's interviews, there's failures, and failures, I guess, also part of testing whether the product is a fit. Are there any other measures or metrics that you're looking at to get to where you are today to understand whether the product would fit the market?
The insurance one, the failure was so fast, we were not looking at any measures, did customer interviews, and we understood there was no market. For the first version of our asset-backed lending solution, where we had that physical component, suppose to pick up physical devices. Prior to even pivoting to this, we did customer interviews. So we started just to talk to Latin American adults and Colombia, Brazil, and Mexico through the network we have over there. We went over there. We launched some Facebook campaigns to get a first feel about how acquisition looks like, if people actually are interested into joining such an initiative. Of course, there was no activation then because there was nothing on the market. That were the most crucial things for us was to talk to the end user directly and or collect some end users, let's say, initial commitment to be part of such a product. Plus, on top of it, of course, we were challenged during several months by VC funds because we were looking to fundraise and we succeeded a few months ago. We closed our round. Basically, expertise from local and worldwide VCs plus a lot of exchanges with real persons gave us confidence that we will build, and we are building now and releasing something that they want to use, because there's a lot of hypotheses we might have, but it's really easy to launch a product. We think there's a market fit because, okay, people need cash loans. But We can do it either in a way that really serves what they need, or we can do according to our assumptions and then most likely will fail. I would say that's the things we look the most at. And today, just to maybe put things in perspective, I mean, it's not crazy figures, but prior to launch now, we have 11,000 subscribers on our waiting list. We built the waiting list only now for this specific last iteration of our product, like being 100% digital. And we did it in 2 months. Great conversions, really happy about it. And on top of having this waiting list, and so we'll release the product to them, we are actually discussing with our users. So we're running custom interviews again. Now when users who are waiting for the product to be released, who subscribe to it, who are sharing the news among their network. So we're calling them basically, just to get an okay, or who you are, what you do, why do you need cash for, how do you usually tackle this problem on the market, what don't you like about other solutions. So we can still improve even last minute a few things on our solution. And I'll give you an example, and this is really crucial. A lot of lenders in Latin America, some lenders, let's say at least, if you would default a loan, the lender would call your network, like your friends or your family, and pressure them so that the information reaches you that you have to pay back the loan. And obviously, the end user hates it, and we got these feedbacks now. We saw this in Facebook rooms, but as well, we hear that on the phone talking to our users. So we're implementing clear messages on our journey, and we did this change last week, that we are not performing such actions. We actually will build as well, not even the product, but the whole company philosophy, customer support, and even the team responsible to make sure that our users will pay back their loans according to what our users tell us about how is the experience today in the market. So I would focus mainly on this. Since we're not growing yet because we're not on the market, at least for this stage, but I believe for any stage of a company, but for this stage, it's really crucial to pay attention to what the market says. And there's no other way of knowing it but talking to the end users, to stakeholders who know the market, obviously. Yeah, I would say that's the most important. Of course, we can read a lot, we can be inspired a lot, but what we see on the market, I mean, maybe we will copy something that fails. So it's just better to get the information firsthand from the users.
I love what you're saying there. So, you know, some key metrics are, you know, boots on the ground, talking to your customers, your end users, using social where you can, Facebook campaigns, chatting to VCs, both worldwide and also the guys, you know, out in your specific jurisdiction. And lastly, continuous customer feedback and making certain that your product iterates according to what customers are saying. I mean, I think those are some great metrics to build and launch a good tech platform. But moving on, you know, obviously you guys moved from Europe into a totally different market, into Latin America, into Mexico. So I guess, how are you right now approaching market entry, or how have you approached market entry into a totally new continent, location, etc.?
So team-wise, can you frame me a bit, or you don't want to frame me on purpose? And I ask.
Yeah, more so from team could be an element, but making certain that, you know, once you launch, that, you know, customers are knocking at your door, you have the right infrastructure set up, you are regulated correctly, and all the types of checks that we'd have to do in order to launch a product in a specific location as a financial service product.
Our general mindset was that we need help because it's not our market. We don't know the local regulation because we were never operating there, so we can discover it's reading a lot and so on, but we need help. So we are spamming or activating as much network as we can, even randomly, not randomly, but like searching for experts from the industry on LinkedIn and just reaching out to them. And I refer to this even like a year ago. Today we have some network, we have a decent network over there, but a year ago, when knowing no one, we're just reaching out to people from the industry with simple LinkedIn messages. Hey, we're launching an early stage fintech solution. Could you share with us your expertise from the market? And people are really willing to help and share their knowledge. And of course, not everyone answers, but some people actually are helping us since a year now, and be every couple of months dedicating us even 15 minutes or sharing contacts with us, network, articles, contacts to lawyers, accountants. Actually, without knowing anyone, the first time we went to Mexico, we managed to, I mean, this is not crucial, but it was helpful. We met a few law firms. We, in a few days, actually decided which one we'll work with, understood the framework perfectly, we have to comply with. And same from other stakeholders, we managed our way with, for instance, Visa and MasterCard, because at some point we were thinking about issuing the loans on debit cards. to even bank people in for those of our clients who wouldn't be banked. We are not doing it at the moment because it's not a must for our model, actually. But Visa and MasterCard obviously helped us a lot as well with their knowledge, with their network. I mean, they have great network. They work basically within every company in the market. So when we were looking for, having solutions so that people can pay back us in cash in physical stores in Mexico, Visa made some introductions with the biggest, like, kind of 7-Eleven chain in Mexico. So I would say our approach generally is we need help. We're happy to get it. We're happy to learn from anyone we talk to. And we needed to build a network of people who will consider that what we're doing is serious, but who will be willing to share the knowledge and contacts with us. That was our main asset because we learned a lot. So yeah, I would say this is what makes it work. And now today, a year later, after the first contacts with Mexico, we have a decent network and we start to make enough noise that we have some inbound opportunities coming to us inbound. Should it be companies willing to work with us or VCs willing to just get in touch with us and get to know us prior to our launch? So I think this worked because we managed now to be compliant, to have a solution, the partners, local partners, to have everything in place basically to launch in a country we're not coming from and in a country where we know no one from a professional perspective. I mean, we have private network there, even prior to this company, but that can sound a bit like not really reasonable, like an Indian woman, a German guy, and a French-Polish guy who decided from Barcelona to launch a fintech in Latin America to promote financial inclusion, offering credits to those who can't finance themselves anywhere else in the market. There's a lot of people on the market willing to help you. And I mean, everyone should leverage this.
Yeah, it sounds like you built an ecosystem and now you built an ecosystem over the last year. And that sort of had a few parts to it. One was partnerships, others social, there's, you know, most probably individual contacts. But now, you know, the dividends is paying off. Inbound leads, as you know, are sort of gold dust, aren't they?
This is actually really, really nice because it's always complicated for an early stage endeavor to always search for opportunities, reach out to people who don't know you. It works. But when opportunities come to you, that's just really nice because so far we didn't have like a game changer opportunity coming in, but it may happen. And just to maybe wrap it up, and I'll try to make shorter answers, Thomas. But basically what we applied should be with customer interviews or with reaching out to people locally to help us. To be honest, it doesn't sound like rocket science. It's not. And we inspire ourselves for what all of other guys are doing. I personally discovered what a custom interview was a year and a half ago. I didn't know that, despite I had the first startup for 10 years of my own with friends. And we eventually sold it, so it worked. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame, but I didn't know what I was. In Germany, they told us, okay, you have to perform custom interviews. What is it? Oh, this is okay, let's do it. Sounds reasonable. And actually, now I think it should be a must for every startup. And for when it comes to reaching out to other people for help, I mean, people are willing to help. So once you did it for the first time and you see it works, let's just do it. Even if you're smart, you have a great team and so on. I mean, there's more brains on the market that can help you. So we're just trying to be really humble about it and just observe what the other guys are doing and it works.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, very shortly launching your MVP, your product into the market. Tell us a bit about that.
So we are now releasing the app in the next days, only for test purposes. So we'll perform some final tests, but it's almost production ready. I mean, it is production ready, minus the last test we will perform. Very next week, we'll open it to our waiting list of users. We'll open it step by step, not to the 11,000 users we have, but like with batches of 50 and 50 users, because production always comes with surprises. I mean, we have few hypotheses of what could or could not work, but we will see how real users and users who don't know the solution as we do will like make their way through the journey and what will technically work. I think we have no real concerns here, but will they understand the journey, the messages, which actions they have to perform? So that will be now really, really, I think, intense period, really interesting, because it will enable us in the next couple of months to reshape few things, I believe, due to some problems we'll observe on production. So we can have from then on like really a product that not only serves what the customer needs, but actually even adjusted based on how the end user wants to use our solution. So really, really interesting. Actually even happy about the fact that production comes with problems because it will just help us improve our solution. But it will be intense and not only for everyone, but again, for the tech team. So I mean, these guys deserve like a lot of respect here, because it's building a complicated product, and it's a perpetuum mobile. I mean, it's changing every day, and there's no rest for this side of the company. And just taking advantage of this open microphone to say that out loud.
Yeah, there we go. And as you move forward, the product gets to market. I mean, let's cast our minds ahead 1 year today. What are your growth plans and scaling plans over the coming year?
We have two factors here to make it grow. First, obviously, our initial core product, like issuing asset-backed loans, has to work. Have now the next months to improve our underwriting, because the idea is not only to back loans against physical collaterals. We have to actually know the customer and have a proper underwriting with a lot of data points. I'm just quoting in this order, but KYC, open banking solutions, other data we could collect to improve the underwriting. So that's, let's say, the main thing we have to focus on this year. And if basically we know how to underwrite and choose customers, and we have this physical asset, this physical collateral, then we can just spend more money and acquire more users and grow. So then that's then possible. But real growth, I believe, will come from building a deeper relationship with the user, that only making a few transactions a year, which are today issuing loans. And we work in it. And this is basically why we're running customer interviews again with our waiting list. And we'll run customer interviews again with our production users. Because, and I will quote you like few examples, which are our hypotheses, which are not validated yet by the users. But basically, users will come to us to get loans because they can't get loans somewhere else except from pawn shops or unsecured digital lenders if they get accepted there. But actually, the acceptance rate is like pretty reduced. So they come to us because they don't have any proper credit score, credit history. So maybe we should actually help them build such a credit score. But then how do we do it? Only by proving that they got loans from us and they paid it back? Or can we add some other mechanisms, features here to prove they always paid their bills on time, for instance, and then build something we could communicate to the market about it? Or should we provide to the micro businesses that come to us, individuals and who want loans for this kind of purposes, should we provide them some other solutions so that they can sell more? And then, of course, we can still provide them credits. The general idea here is to know them better, to know what we'll do next year, how we'll improve the relationship we have with our users and improve our value proposition. But we don't want to launch it now. For first, it will be only assumptions. And second, most importantly, our core product has to be strong. And when it comes to maybe to if you expecting figures, the general idea is within the next 3 years to get at least 5% of the pawn shop of the asset-backed loans market in Mexico, which represents roughly 1 million active users in 3 years. So it's pretty ambitious, and we'll succeed only if we have a first strong product. So this is why we're focusing on this year. And if we have a deeper relationship with the users, so users actually stay with us for a few years.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And you mentioned the three-year plan, and obviously your business outside of the product will have to grow and develop and mature over that period as well. So how do you see that side of the operations changing? Slight shift in different people, different skills coming in?
As different people, definitely. So we have since 2 weeks our first Mexican team member, because so like we moved to Mexico in March, but due to COVID, we came back to Europe, and now watching basically how the situation evolves to come back there. But in the meantime, we're really happy to have our first Mexican team member. He has roughly 20 years of experience in the payment industry, experienced, great network, awesome person. He's actually a guy who started to help us just for free, just because he's a nice guy, since a year when we first reached out to him to LinkedIn, and we didn't know him prior to that. So that's the, let's say, the first new team member that joined us, on top of like we have already like two people in the marketing, several engineers and three co-founders. And now I believe the next people coming on board are all experts from the markets, even from our competitors locally, here that will join us to build customer support. And the team, of course, will be in touch with our users so that actually they pay back the loans. And we will have to recruit, and that would be good to do it early. And this is some learning we get from more experienced entrepreneurs in lending industry, a credit risk rockstar. Because after all, even if there's a physical collateral, even if there's a lot of common sense here, we could get open banking data, a lot of other data to predict if you will pay us back or not. This is our activity, and we just need somebody who's smarter than us and has more experience here. We always do try to surround ourselves with smarter people than us, and this will be, I believe, the key profile we'll be looking for in the next month, because without it, we won't be able to grow as fast as possible, and we will most likely make mistakes we could have avoided. So that's the crucial plan, recruitment plan on our end.
Yeah, cool. And as you move forward as a team and co-founder team, what questions are you asking yourself and factors are you considering to make certain that you continue on that sort of growth trajectory? And, you know, in 3 years' time, you do have those 1 million users in your stable.
We try to challenge ourselves. We are 3 co-founders, and for, let's say, marketing business related decisions, Julian and myself, we always try to challenge ourselves. We try to be challenged by Rochali as well, but we even try to be challenged by investors. We are lucky to have investors we can reach out to on a regular basis. First, internally, we challenge ourselves. For instance, like, we have ideas, we take this idea and we assess, okay, is it a nice to have thing? Is it a must? How to prioritize this? And we debate with Julian. To be honest, we always manage to convince each other. If we would have like the initially a different opinion, we always manage to convince each other about the decision to take. But we take the inputs as well from our investors and other experienced entrepreneurs. I mean, our investors, they're not like experts specifically in exactly what we're doing in our market, but they have similar startups in the portfolio. They've seen a lot of different models, different countries, different markets, different teams. So it's always good to just take half an hour and be challenged by them. And we do the same with other startups from their portfolio. Or sometimes we just switch like from length to startups who are running such things in other markets. We screen on TechCrunch, Y Combinator batches, which startup is doing something interesting. So we feed ourselves as well with this experience. And this is how I think now we manage to take decisions, avoiding some mistakes, because very often the mistake could be like we'd lose the focus and try to add several features on the roadmap, which are not crucial for our business, to be honest, which are not a must. And I think here I think it's rare that we are, let's say, 2 out of 3 co-founders, 2 co-founders taking decisions together. Usually there's one person in charge who has the final cut. Here, I believe we balance ourselves pretty good, and first, we like each other and we have great communication skills between the two of us. So we always try to convince each other and to enforce something. And it really works out. It really works out. And I think that was our strength as well. That was why we managed to close our first round, like European and Indian women, 2 European guys snatching something in Latin America. It wasn't easy to convince. Like, and pre-launch fundraising wasn't easy to convince. Like, most of the VCs would look at it as a complicated setup, but this is how we operate. I think there's really no rocket science here from my end, because this is how I see it. We try to debate everything, talk a lot, and if it's not a must, it's delayed.
I think you just touched on the golden nuggets, and you obviously know what that is, and it's communication. Keep on talking, keep on challenging each other, leverage your network where you can, and also take a look at what others are doing in the market. I mean, yeah, some sage advice, some great advice there.
So for communication, yeah, I think it's really important to be humble, because then we're not blind. If we're humble, we accept what the others are saying and what we see, and we inspire ourselves like a lot from what other guys are doing. I can quote you some startups in Indonesia, in the Philippines, in Nigeria, in Colombia that we're watching, because these guys just, they're doing a great job. So like, this company in Indonesia, prior to launch, the 2 co-founders went in the ground and talked to 400 micro entrepreneurs. So basically now the solution they launched on the market, I think they got 1 million customers in a year. Why wouldn't we inspire ourselves from what they did? I mean, yeah, I think it's really important to be humble.
Totally agree with you on that. And you mentioned learning, continuous learning and what have you. And lots of guests I talk to also take opportunities to have a bit of time out. And then during that time out, they read books, business books, startup books and what have you. And I'm wondering if you do the same. And if you are doing, what book are you reading right now, or have you just finished reading?
So I'm now finishing reading for the second time, Lean Customer Development. It's a book, basically. So it's from Cindy Alvarez, and I'm not sure, I don't know if it's the best one on this topic, but it talks about customer interviews, basically, that there's no sense into building a product if it's not based on what the users needs. And the only way to know the users needs is to talk to people. And there's a way to do it, because if if you ask anyone, what do you think about our startup? I mean, everyone will say it's awesome just because people are nice and they want to please us. So basically we have to just ask you, for instance, you, Richard, what do you do? Okay, how do you solve it when you have cash issues? And we have to read in between the lines to understand what's your problem. We can ask, not ask you directly, would you use that, this or that solution? And Lean Customer Development is really, I think, a great book for this. Not sure if it's the best, but it's really like repeating over and over again how not to screw customer interviews and how crucial it is. And I'm reading now for the second time because I read it last year for the first time. And now actually we asked our teams to read it as well. We asked our mentors from Munich from last year when we failed to make a workshop with us on customer interviews. And so just to have everything fresh and reading this again. That's the book at the moment.
Cool. As we finish off today's podcast, how can people find and connect with you and your business?
I would say LinkedIn is the best way to reach out to me. And actually, since I'm expecting a lot from people I reach out to on LinkedIn, I try to answer to anyone who reaches out to me, even if now out of 10 inbound messages I receive in LinkedIn are like tech studios proposing outsourced tech solutions. I always try to answer because I believe what you give is what you receive as well.
Listen, it's been an amazing session. I've really enjoyed listening to what you guys are doing. Thanks so much for giving us a glimpse into your world today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me, Richard. I'll pay attention to, of course, the other interviews we're running, and it's a great initiative.
Speak to you soon. Have a good day.